Good evening. I'm K2 Romeo India Whiskey. My name is Dick. It's the time to begin the TechNet at Limerock, as we've done for the last 32 or 33 years. I think 1982. 34 years. Main purpose of the TechNet is education. You will hear curious amateurs gathering at this time every week to share their knowledge, share what they've learned. They help each other understand the crazy characteristics and the mystery of radio and wireless equipment. The books do a not very good job. The instructors do a mediocre job. So if you really want to know radio, you want to talk to a ham radio operator, somebody who has really done things with his own hands, with experimenting with antennas and transmitters and receivers. Stop for a minute. So that's where the real smarts is coming from my point of view. The very loose schedule we have on the TechNet is that in the beginning we have people sign in because they do have a question or a comment, and we take them in order. Try to answer their questions. No guarantees. By that I mean there's a certain error rate. A realistic engineer or a realistic person doing almost anything has to realize that you have a certain batting average. Nobody bats 1,000 all the time. So there's a certain amount of error that creeps in. But this being a what's the word for it? Peer-reviewed, that's the best word I can use. By way of the fact that the last 10 years of the TechNet are published on a website. That website is www.amateurradio.tangovictor. Amateurradio.tangovictor. You go there, and the last 10 years worth of TechNet are recorded. Choose the right year, the right month, the right week, and you can play back that particular session. And stand by a second. Over those 10 years, it's a very enthusiastic guy named Mike Perry. KC2NJI has been doing that work. There was another Mike, K1MJM, who runs another website which has supporting information for the TechNet. And that website is LimerockTechNet.com. LimerockTechNet.com. So by way of those two sites, you can get past articles and graphs and lots of good information, pictures. There's even a picture of me inside of one of my antennas. At this time, we're going to take a check-in from people who do have a question or a comment. If you're just listening, you need not sign in. We used to have in the beginning long lists of people saying that, hey, they're listening. Well, after 34 years, it doesn't have to be proven anymore that somebody's listening. So if you do have a question or comment, you're going to give me your call letters, your name. Try to remember to give me your name because I'm so forgetful. I like referring to people by their name when I go back to them. And the word yes, which means you do have a question or a comment. So we're going to take check-ins at this time. Please give me your call as a name and that word yes right now. K2RAW listening.
N2AQH. Andy. Yes. Let me enter YYY. Joe, yes.
Here we go.
Okay, we to end with the space report number 253. To be precise.
I think it's going to be space report number 253. You're right. Huh. How about that? Maybe I'm wrong on my number. When I thought it was 1652. We'll soon find out. Stand by. So far I've got 2AQH, Andy, W2LYY, Joe, KE2EJ, Eric, and I bet you we missed somebody else, WS2N. Anybody else wanted to check in, give me a call letter and name right now.
USA, Steven, yes?
Okay, that last one was quite weak. I heard the word yes. Please give me the call letters and name one more time, sir.
K2QFJ.
Okay, I got KC2QFJ, Steve. Your RF is quite weak, quite a bit of noise in there, Steve, and your audio is quite low. You're going to have to shout a little bit louder when we get to you. Okay, Andy, N2HUH. What would you like to talk about tonight? K2LIW, the TechNet, you've got it, Andy.
Well, good evening, Richard. I was loading up my 65-foot wire on my Icon antenna, remote automatic antenna tuner at 160, 80, 40, and 20 meters with no problem. It was getting 1-to-1, 1.2 to 1 SWRs on most of the band and no problem. And so I decided to buy the kilowatt and a half mostly fun junk tuner. And throw that up there. It should work just as good or better, I would figure. And in a way, it does. But however, it will not. It will not load up on 20 meters as the previous tuna did. So I'm wondering. I'm still scratching my head on that one. What's going on there?
Okay, give us a few more words. Did and I didn't catch it. Your long wire antenna is how long? You're feeding it with what transmission line? What was the previous antenna tuner? And you replaced it with the MFJ. And you're saying the MFJ will not tune on 20 meters. And what's your definition of not tune? Doesn't get the standing wave ratio below 2-to-1 or something like that. So fill in some of those blanks, Andy. N2HUH, KQRIW in the TechNet.
Well, it's antenna, previous antenna tuner was ICOM AH2, Alpha Henry 2. It's rated at 150 watts, and I think the range of the MFJ unit is just as good or better, if I remember correctly. I'll have to double check that. And it's just a 65-foot long non-resonant wire. Again, everything was working fine with the the ICOM antenna tuner on all bands, and the multi-fun junk is working rather well on all bands except 20 meters. It won't load up. It won't match down to, I have it set for 1.3. And it does that on all bands except 20, and it seems like sometimes it'll look like it'll lock up at 1.5, and sometimes it can go below 2-to-1 or 3-to-1, which makes no sense to me why the cheaper tuner is working fine. So that's pretty much why I'm so baffled. And if it is, maybe just because the components are different or a million other reasons. I can at least think of a dozen, I guess. But what would I do to increase the chances of it loading up on 20 meters?
What is the transmission line and how many feet of it, Andy? Between the MFJ or the ICOM antenna tuner, which is in the shack, I presume, and are both of those an automatic antenna tuner? Does either one have a manual tuning mode? Because you did say sometimes it locks up at 1.5-to-1, sometimes it locks up at 1.3-to-1 on 20 meters. And I presume we're talking about the MFJ. The fact you talk about locking up suggests it's an automatic antenna tuner. And was the ICOM also automatic? And do they have a manual tune mode? Over to you, Andy, N2HUH, K2LIW, and the TechNet.
The coaxial end is I'm not sure, in all honesty. If I had a guess, I'd say it's approximately 40 to 50 feet. And I'm reading the SWR on the radio and on the radio or transceiver antenna tuner meter. You know, bypassed. I'm just looking at the meter. And they're both remote automatic antenna tuners. And I think I answered all your questions.
Okay, so they're both an automatic antenna tuner. They're remote. I presume you've got 40 to 50 feet of coax, and the antenna tuner is at the end of the coax, at the beginning of the 65 feet of wire. And is there an antenna usually has two terminals, call it a hot and a cold. So where is the ground in this system at the antenna? In other words, is just the end of the coax cable, is the shield hanging, so to speak? The coax cable goes to the antenna tuner. The antenna tuner has a coax output, or at least a two-terminal output. One terminal goes to your 65 feet of wire. Where does the other terminal go? And is there a manual tune mode? Is there a way that you can force the tuning in a non-automatic way? Over to you, Andy, K2LAW.
I don't understand your question about what terminals or anything. I didn't understand what you mean. Is it the output could either choose between a 50 ohm, which would be antenna A, or antenna B would be the random wire insulated nut that's on the tuner. So I believe that's the answer to your question. That was your question. There's a ground wire connected to the ground of the antenna tuner that goes to my ground radio system, and so it worked. It's exactly attached the same way for both tuners, NICOM and EMFJ. And bypass mode, I guess by turning off the bias TDC to the coax, which is the only thing that the two tuners don't have in common, is that I'm using a 12 volts to the coax, and that's the only difference between the two units that's obvious. I'm using the 12 volts on the coax.
Okay, the ground radio system, what does that consist of, Andy? And how close is the end of the coax and the automatic and the remote antenna tuner? Physically, where is that? Many people will put a random wire strung up in the trees, and the end that they're feeding is 20 feet above the ground. Well, in your case, your antenna tuner is feeding a 65-foot piece of wire and a ground plane radio system. So, physically, how did you do that? Over to you, Andy, K2LAW.
The DC and lightning arrest ground and or radio system is all connected to the base of the basically there's a 40 foot long piece of wire going from the antenna tuner to the ground radio system, or the entire grounding system, ground radio system, ground system. It's just one all the same to me. And both tuners have the same ground system connected to them. So nothing's changed there.
Here, Jack. So if I understand correctly, your antenna tuner is 40 feet in the air. Go ahead, Eric. K2EJ, K2IW.
Yeah, I just wanted to point out, you didn't say whose tune of remote tune he's using, but I wanted to point out in some instances, remote tuners, they've got a microprocessor in them. They usually in a very well filtered box, and they're pretty much protected from RF, but when you run that long piece of cable back to your radio or control box, sometimes, depending upon the way things are wired up, you get RF into the control cable, which brings RF back up to the microprocessor. The microprocessor then seems to think it's doing what it's doing, and then that little bit of RF is leaking in. Kind of gets it, either gets it confused, it'll crash it, or it won't consistently come back to the same place. So, if it's one of those kinds of things, I would be a little cautious about it. And as a general rule, general principle on a device like that, I generally put snap-on chokes at both ends of things to try and keep things quiet. But it's just been my experience. It may not be his particular case. K2RW, K2J.
Okay, that's something to try. If it's possible, splice another piece of coax between the shack and the automatic antenna tuner. Just change that length of cable. It might possibly be a resonant length that's doing some funny things. The 65 feet of wire, if I did my calculations right, is very close to a full wavelength on 20 meters. So you're feeding the open end of a 20-foot, of a full wavelength antenna, which gives you an extremely high impedance, probably 1,000 ohms or so. I wonder if does MFJ or ICOM, in either case, say anywhere in their owner's manual what's the highest sustaining wave ratio it can handle? Because I'm pretty sure you're pushing it to the limit, if you know what I mean. Any change in the length of the wire, the 65-foot long wire, could also make a significant difference where it can now lock up where previously it was very difficult. So, back to you, Andy. So you got a couple more experiments to try there. N2HUH, K2RIW, and the TechNet.
Well, that's even more, I already thought about what Eric said, and that's the ICOM, the one that was working perfectly, the ICOM with the remote control box that I have in the shack. The MFJ has no control box. There is no control box in the shack. There is no control box. It's all up at the, it's all in the remote, remote antenna tuner. There's nothing in the shack. All I do is transmit, and it automatically tunes. Like I said, the only difference between the two units, the different units, is that I have a 12-volt power supply to the bias T box in the shack going up to the tuner. The only way to make it exactly the same as the other tuner is to run the 12 volts to the 12-volt terminal on the remote tuner and not through the coax. That's the only difference between the two systems. So I believe that the range of the MFJ tuner is superior to the ICOM. If it's not, they're both exactly the same. So that makes no sense as to why the MFJ is not tuning as the ICOM did on 20 meters. I know that 65 feet may be a near resonant one wavelength, but again, the fact remains that the other tuner didn't care. It still tuned. And I'm trying to determine what I can do to make the MFJ, to force that one to actually work as well as the other unit, N2HUH.
Yeah, let me pull this open to the net. I wonder if anyone has run into a similar situation with an automatic antenna tuner, particularly remote type, and where it had trouble locking up on a particular band. Has anyone else run into that? And if they did, what did you do to solve it? If you've got any information on this, first-hand or second-hand information, please give me your call letters right now, K2RIW and TechNet.
K2UPS Mobile.
K2UPS Mobile. Rich, where are you located tonight? And tell me what you've run into along these lines. You've got it, Rich. K2UPS, K2RIW.
Hi, good evening, Dick. And I'm near Salesville, Ohio, heading back to New York. And it's light rain and overcast here at the moment. My only suggestion would be to make that wire a little bit longer. I know he said the other tuner tuned 65 feet, but that is the length you want to avoid for a random length wire. You want to make it more like either 63 or a little bit less, or maybe 67 to 70. That might make all the difference. But when I look at the charts that I use, 65 is right in the middle of a bad length to use for a multi-band operation like that. So, I mean, if he can, try tacking on 3 feet of wire, something onto the far end, and see if that makes any difference for him. Back to net.
Yeah, that sounds very good, Rich. Yeah, I also worry that the 65 feet is a full wavelength. And when you feed a thoroughly resonant piece of wire, that's half wave or full wave resonant, and you're feeding the open end when enders, you're feeding a 1,000, 1,500, 2,000 ohms, you're feeding an extremely high impedance, where therefore the standing wave ratio could be 20 to 1. Which is beyond the range of what a automatic antenna tuner can handle. And what's crazy in this case is that by adding an extra length or subtracting some wire, or just adding a shunt piece of wire, in other words, you could clip on another piece of wire and just let it hang down toward the ground. Clip on, 5 or 10 feet of wire at the feed end. You're creating a straight capacitance, but you're knocking it out of exact resonance. And so almost any change along these lines will get it away from that resonant point, which is the highest possible impedance, therefore the highest possible standing wave ratio. So as you can tell, my recommendation and Rich's recommendation, Andy, is to make some of those changes and try it, because the extremely high voltages you get at the high impedance end of a thoroughly resonant half-wave or full-wave resonant piece of wire, those extremely high voltages are pretty hard for the automatic antenna tuner to handle. That automatic antenna tuner has to measure the reflection coefficient and the phase angle, and when that voltage climbs sky high like that, I don't think it can accurately measure the phase angle anymore and therefore know what to do. So, you're going to try a couple of those experiments, Andy. You're going to come back to us and tell us what happened. And we're looking forward to that.
And repeater, timeout.
So, N2HUH with some homework to do, and then you're going to come back to us, Andy. K2LIW and TechNet. You got it, Andy.
Oh, okay, yes. Basically, I was shooting for 63 feet, but there's always a chance I made a mistake. Again, that's why I said 65, but... since we're down to the nitty gritty, that's what I was shooting for originally a couple of years ago when I cut it. That's why my memory is a little. I think I shot for 63, but I always could have made a mistake. But I'm going to try doing it, shunting, making it a foot or two longer. I'll do a lot of experimenting. Don't really want to, but I guess I'll have to. And let's say I didn't know the length of the wire. Is there any way I could? I guess without a fancy analyzer, I can't do it. And I don't see where... Would I be able to see a full wavelength resonance somewhere if using a signal generator or, RF generator, rather, and checking SWR or whatever it would take? Is there any way that I can actually see where that is resonant, which I know I've done already, but... on the other tuner, I want to try it on this tuner. And what do you think about that? Is there a way would I be able to see an actual resonance somewhere from, let's just simply say 1.8 to 28 megahertz?
Yeah, without an antenna analyzer and a lot of bypassing, that would be a difficult measurement. You've got a couple of other things to try even before you started adding and subtracting wire, and that is
K2UPS.
I'm going to go to Rich in a minute, and that is I'm speculating that at the extremely high voltage, the antenna tuner's automatic circuitry that has to measure phase angle is running into saturation. So if instead of running the transmitter at the 100 watt level, you ran it at the 5 or 10 watt level, It might do a better job of locking up. That's one thing you can try. Another thing is you can try locking it up at the lowest possible frequency or the highest possible frequency of 20 meters, 14.00 versus 14.5 or whatever the high end is. And then again, it's going to quite possibly behave differently. So try low power and the end of the band, see what happens. K2UPS, K2RIW, go ahead, Rich.
Okay, Dick, I was going to suggest just what you did too, that say if he's going from 40 meters and jumping to 20 meters, try a different spot at 20 meters. Sometimes that will work. Even if that's the spot you pick is not where you ultimately want to operate, as long as it's within the band, it may tune there, and then when you ask it to tune where you really want to go, it might just find a solution. The other thing I want to tell you is just because you got a brand new tuner from MSJ, or from anybody, as a matter of fact, don't assume it's in 100% working order. You may have problems within that tuner. I don't know if that's the external tuner you have uses a motorized like air capacitor or if it's all latching relays, but I had just recently purchased a MFJ loop tuner that does use, it's manually tuned, but you have a variable air capacitor in it. And I was having issues, and it wasn't until I opened it up and looked at it that two of the plates on that capacitor were almost touching. And when I tried to rotate it where they were fully meshed, it would touch the other side, and I was shorting it out. So, you know, don't just assume that it is 100% working. You may actually have a problem with that tuner back then.
Okay, some more good suggestions there for you, Andy. Andy, your automatic antenna tuner. Am I correct in assuming that it's sitting something like 40 feet in the air? And what is it sitting on? What did you mount it on? Over to you, Andy. K2RIW.
All right, I just also wanted to say that I actually did the band extreme experiment already, you know, the bottom of the band, the top of the band, in the middle, and every way is in between, like every 100 or 200 kcs or whatever the hell I did, all kinds of combinations. And it will not tune on the entire 20-meter band. It's about, basically it's at the apex of the attic. The tuner is, it's screwed onto a piece of wood in the attic, the apex of the attic, and the wire is not touching or close to any piece of wood or anything, and there's air insulation between there and more than a few inches, and then the rest, the most of it runs outside in open space at approximately 35 feet of height, possibly 40 at its height, and I was thinking of raising it a little bit more, but that's something to be done later on at 2HOH.
Andy, did you ever try running it at a lower power level just to see if it would lock up? Let's assume that you normally run it at 100 watts. Have you ever tried it at, say, 10 watts to see what happens? And because it has no control box in the shack, I presume the only option you have is to either feed it the bias T voltage, 12 volts or whatever it is, or not feed it. And I wonder if you don't feed it voltage, if it automatically goes into a bypass mode. Over to you, Andy, K2LIW in the tech net.
Yes, the bias T allows me to, when I turn the 12 volts off, it will be in bypass mode, which I've already put more than a few hundred watts through a bypass. It seems to be fine, and everything is fine. And I've also ran a few hundred watts through it when it did tune successfully on a particular band, and it seems to work fine. I'm happy about that. And I could feed the external unit, you know, from a separate wire like the other unit with 12 volts, And I think you asked another question. I'm going to hem and haw a little bit to see if I can remember what your third question was, or your other question anyway. And I don't remember. You had one more question that I can't remember. Go ahead, Dick.
Have you ever tried running it at the 5 or 10 watt mode, 5 or 10 watts out of the transmitter, and see if it'll lock up? Andy, go ahead.
I think the manufacturer recommends something between 25 and 100, and I think 100, anything over 125, it doesn't like that. And on a humorous note, there is, if you take the plastic cover off the external tuner, there is some push buttons and a display and a way of programming it and getting other nice information, but when you actually have it installed, you don't see that. You know, there's nothing in the shack, which is ridiculous, but I guess that would cost money. But the funny thing is that if you put more than 125 watts through it, it will actually say, huh? AQH, my call sign, huh? Too much power. I thought that was kind of funny. And that's how I feel right now. Like, I'm perplexed. Yes, I tried it with a minimum. I think it needs at least 10 to 15 watts to tune. I did try that. I think the recommended is 25, but I went as low as 10 or 15. Back to you.
If it gives you an AQH and it's under a sealed cover at a remote location, how do you know it gave you an AQH, Andy? Go ahead.
Richard, you're talking to Andrew here. You're talking to Andrew. Andrew, you got to remember who you're talking to. Well, course number one, before I'm going to install this dopey thing from MFJ, you damn well know I'm going to throw it through its paces here, right here in the shack where it's right next to me. And I'm going to play with it and get comfortable with it and going to get intimate with it and slap it around a little bit if I have to and talk nice if that's what it takes. But no, it was working fine. For the most part, I was doing some tests, and I was actually thinking of, since it's in the attic, I was actually thinking of leaving it in the attic and actually have a camera on it so I can read any of that acute information that it has on the display, but that's also another thing I was going to do. Then I wanted to actually run wires to the push buttons and have make my own control box, and you name it, I was thinking of all kinds of, dreaming up all kinds of things to do to try to have that in my shack instead of up there. And although in the attic, it's only about, you know, another 10 feet of, that would be 10 feet of wire, so that's not so bad. I think I can manage something like that if I have nothing better to do. But back to you, Dick, N2HOH.
When you tried it out first in the shack, did you have an extra length of wire from the shack up to the attic to pick up the 65-foot long wire? Go ahead.
No, in all honesty, I didn't. I was using coax. I was using other antennas that have coax in the shack that I was using, like the butternut all band vertical, the 20 meter dipole that I had in the attic. I was using that, and then I decided to take that down. Cause I never. That's another story. But the point is, I took that down for now. No dipole in the attic, just the wire. And the tuner was working very well. The real test was going to be with the non-resonant random wire in the attic, of course, like where the other tuner was, and the ICOM tuner. And I'm happy with the tuner, except on 20 meters. That's the bottom line.
If I remember correctly, it worked correctly for you on every other band, which I'm assuming is going to be 10, 15, 40, 80, and maybe 160. It worked on every other band. Is that true, Andy? Go ahead.
Yes, the original ICOM tuner worked on every band for the most part, especially on 20, and the MFJ works exceptionally well on all bands, maybe even an extra band, but with the exception of 20, the MFJ will not tune 20 at all, anywhere on 20, and that's why I'm still scratching my head as I speak to you. It's just not making any sense to me.
Okay, you're about to make some changes and go back and try it again. And we think, both Rich and I think you hit that magic length of your random wire, which is very hard for it to tune. And I think you were lucky that the ICOM could do it. We're going to go over to Rich now, W2LYY, K2LIW. What's new on the south shore of Long Island, Rich, and how are those electrons treating you tonight? W2LYY, K2LIW in the tech net.
Are you going to stop calling me Rich? You do that like about 50% of the time, if not more. I'm only kidding, Dick.
Sorry about that, Joe. I get names goofed up an awful lot, as you can tell.
Okay, very good. This is a curiosity question, actually. It's not really something I'm playing with or, going to use it or do anything with it, really. It's just sort of a curiosity question. You had said that you, instead of running a vertical antenna on high band, you run it slanted 45. And you said by slanting it vertical 45, it drops out 3 dB. And I've heard this phenomenon or used with cellular stuff, where they'll slant it, 45 right or 45 left, and it drops down about 3 dB. But there's a, definite drop between the, from one to the other. Anyway, is there any way, does that come from a formula, or just simple measurement? I mean, what happens if you took the antenna, instead of being vertical, you went, say, 30 degrees either way, or you went 60 degrees either way? Because going 90 degrees, then you completely, you're changing polarity, and that, from what I understand, is supposed to drop it down from 20 to 25 dB differential between vertical to completely horizontal. But what happens when you go in between, like, at 60 degrees or 30 degrees compared to 45? What happens?
Yeah, there's an exact formula giving this to you, Joe, and it's, call it vector decomposition, if you like. In other words, if I'm pushing my lawnmower, a manual, old-fashioned lawnmower, and the handle coming out of the lawnmower is at a 45-degree angle, and I'm pushing straight parallel to that handle, how much energy is going straight down to the ground, how much force is going straight down, how much force is going straight out, if you know what I mean. It's a cosine theta function. So if I was sensing the signal coming from your antenna with a vertically polarized thing, like a dipole, and you start off with your transmitting antenna exactly vertical, the angular difference between those two antennas is 0 degrees. Cosine of 0 degrees is 1.0. When I tilt my antenna 45 degrees to the right or to the left, cosine of 45 degrees is 0.707. That's the voltage formula. And since power is a function of voltage squared, you take 0.707 and square it, and you get 0.5. So that predicts where you're going to get half power. If I tilt it to 30 degrees, 30 degrees is going to give me cosine of 30 degrees, I think it's 0.86. Something like that, 0.866, and you square that, it's going to come down to something like 3/4 power. Go to 60 degrees, cosine of 60 degrees, I'm not sure of the exact number, but it's a smaller number. So you take the cosine of the angle that differs between the transmitting antenna and the receiving antenna. That is the voltage vector you're going to get by vector decomposition. Take the cosine of that angle, square it, and that's your power ratio. Then take the log of that, multiply by 10, and you know how many dB down you are.
Repeater, timeout.
So it's an exact formula. Your next question is going to be, if I tilt my antenna 90 degrees, it's horizontal, and I'm sensing vertical, cosine of 90 degrees is 0. So in theory, you have no power at all. Well, what's happening here is that very few antennas are absolutely pure. If you're feeding your dipole with a gamma match or a T match or whatever, folded dipole structure, there's a little bit of the wiring at right angles to the dipole. So there's always a little bit of energy being radiated at right angles. So you think you've got a linear antenna. It's a very slight ellipse. And there's also, almost all antennas have a little bit of power being radiated at right angles. But if your antenna was absolutely pure, and if there was no funny reflections going on in the environment. A 90-degree difference should give you absolute no signal at all. To be 2RYY, to a guy named Joe, K2RYW, go ahead, Joseph.
Okay, very good. I'm complaining about a performance formula. I'd have to just work that out a little bit just to, you know, get a feel for it. But it's interesting, though, playing with stuff like that. You know, I like the theory behind stuff, how what makes it tick.
That's exactly the right attitude, Joe. The people who really make progress are the people who have got curiosity. They ask all kinds of crazy questions and eventually get some crazy answers, put it all together and say, aha, is that how it really works? Like, one of my favorite questions to ask people is, why does the bottom of your bicycle pump get hot when you're using it? And a lot of people will use the equation dv equals nrt. And in other words, they're changing the volume, they're applying a pressure, they're adding energy to the system. That tells you how much. It doesn't tell you why. The air in the room with you at 70 degrees Fahrenheit is moving at 500 meters per second. That's the average speed of the air molecule, 500 meters per second. The air in the bottom of that bicycle pump is moving 1,000 meters per second. It got 500 meters per second faster because you pushed down on that plunger. Who did that? How did it do that? You'd be amazed at that answer. You probably have heard that one from me before. So, back to you, Joe, for any final and all of the above. W2RYY, K2RYW in the tech land.
What you just said about the air pressure or air, you're talking about molecular movement of the molecules of air, not them, you know, going across the room. You're talking about just the rotation. They're moving at 500 meters per second. That's what I believe you're saying?
On average, each individual air molecule in the room that's with you right now, Joe, each individual air molecule is moving, on average, 500 meters per second. It's an extremely random action. It never goes more than a few nanometers in any one direction before hitting another air molecule, bouncing and going in some other direction. So it's a real random bug walk. But on average, all those air molecules are moving 500 meters per second, and there's a direct relationship as to what is their average speed and what is the temperature. You think your thermometer is measuring temperature. That's true. But once you know the temperature in absolute degrees Kelvin, you know exactly what is the average kinetic energy of each and every air molecule on average. Some of them moving a little faster, some of them moving a little slower, but they're still an average. Temperature is average kinetic energy. You could say your thermometer is measuring how fast the molecules are moving. You put your thermometer in the bottom of that bicycle pump when you're really operating it a whole lot, you'll get a pretty high temperature. So that gives you a hint. But still, the exact procedure, and by the way, you said the molecules are moving in a circular path. Well, they're moving in every possible zigzag path as possible in that room with you, Joe. Oh, you, Joe, KQIW.
Okay, very good. Thank you for answering my initial question. I will have to, play with it when it counts. I just find it kind of interesting, and I have noticed that because, I mean, for years ago, having antennas on other bands going from vertical to horizontal, you never lost a signal. There was always something coming in, but it dropped considerably, and I thought the average rule of thumb was something like 20 or 25 dB between vertical to horizontal.
Yeah, I have taken on an experiment once inside of an anechoic chamber where I knew I was getting rid of almost all of the stray reflections, and I was using two very pure antennas, which I know were as close to linear polarization as possible, and I did rotate the two antennas at right angles to each other, and I think I saw a null of 45 dB down. And so if you did the experiment carefully enough, I bet you could get a 60 or a 70 decibel null. It's possible, because the cosine of 90 degrees is zero. So as far as the trigonometry is concerned, the real formula, if your antennas were pure enough and it was not any reflections in the environment, you could get a very deep null. And circuits like that are being used on radio telescopes in order to do receiving experiment called polarimetry. They really like to know of that star they're looking at, how much of the signal is horizontal, vertical, clockwise, counterclockwise, and so on. They really like to know the polarimetry of that signal. That gives them a lot of hints as to what the local magnetic field around that star is likely to be. Let me stand by. Okay, the next person on our list was Eric, KE2EJ. So go right ahead, Eric, K2RIW.
K2RIW, K2EJ. Well, this is really more a question for you guys. It's really aimed at you and Joe RYY. Have you guys, as far as digital television is concerned, do you notice anything different as of late?
Well, I'm not sure what to look for. Joe, have you noticed anything of different of late? Like maybe Channel 4, those fill-in antennas have changed, and maybe the scalloping has changed? Have you seen any differences, Joe? Over to you, Joe.
No, I haven't looked recently. It's like the days or the weeks that when the stuff is being tested off the World Trade Center, all of a sudden these signals on these particular channels got immensely stronger than they've ever been before. So I don't follow all this stuff. Okay, surprise me. What's going on?
I know we've had some band openings lately, and I've had some serious channel dropouts that lasted for hours at a time. But I think this time of year I always get that. We always get a lot of band openings in the late May, beginning of June. KE2EJ, to fill us in on this mystery. K2IW, the TechNet. I'll wait for the beeps.
All right, now, if you guys are going to look, you'll look at RF Channel 35, which is branded as 47. As of 3 days ago, it began operating from the World Trade Center. So I was wondering if you guys noticed it or not.
I always get 47 very strong, so therefore I wouldn't know the difference. My old converter used to give me signal strength. My new one doesn't. Have you been watching 47, Joe? Go ahead. Which, by the way, is almost always Spanish.
I'm being nice and letting the courtesy cut. Eric, do you mean RF channel 36 or RF channel 35? Because I was watching 35 from Connecticut tonight. I wasn't getting any interaction from New York. You mean 36?
Let me see. Yeah, I mean 36. They're moving to 35, sorry. But yeah.
I'm going to tell you something. That would be very hard for me to notice much of a difference because they come in so blastedly strong. They're not the strongest one on the block, but they're right up there. But how long have they been transmitting off the World Trade Center? Because I will take a look a little later on just to observe it, because I remember what it used to come in at.
And where did they transmit from before? Over to you, Eric.
They were at Empire. Well, they're still actually at Empire. But they started transmitting from World Trade, I believe, 4 days ago.
Okay, you said they're still at Empire. I'm having trouble believing they're transmitting from both. So like 4 days ago, they turned off Empire and turned on Freedom Tower, is that what you're saying?
That's correct.
And did they do that at midnight or some very specific time that you had the a priori knowledge about?
10 in the morning.
I think you said 10 in the morning?
I don't know what time in the morning, but sometime in the morning. It was after 8 in the morning, I'm sure.
Now, there is branded 47-1 and 47-2. They're both Spanish. What's unique about 47-2 is that the program guide it gives you tells you what's happening. It types it out in English, 47-2. 47-1, it types it out in Spanish. Over to you, Eric, K2RIW.
It's all coming from the same stream. It's Telemundo. It's when they go to 35, they'll not only have the Spanish, but they'll have NBC.
But I think you're saying right now we've got 47-1 and 47-2 in the branding. I presume there will not be any other 47-dash numbers. In other words, I'll go to the other network with its brand. Like if it was NBC, it'll tell me it's Channel 4 by brand. But you're saying it really will be on RS-36. Over to you, Eric, KQRIW.
Is anybody else transmitting from World Trade Center or just them?
Right now, it's just them. And they're on a temporary antenna that's in the top part of the spire. The actual UHF antenna that they will be using will be one level down in the spire, so. It's a temporary antenna, and it's going to change again.
Are they transmitting Omni or on one of these panel antennas that's, goes out at like 90 degrees or New York 90 or whatever you want to call it there, Manhattan 90 or something like that?
It's Omni and it's secularly polarized.
Okay, now you got me very curious. Now I'm going to have to turn on, I'm going to turn on my instrument. I'll come back in about 5 minutes. I'll let you know what the signal strength is.
Now, we should be on the air from World Trade sometime in October, or maybe a little earlier.
On what, RF-13?
Until 2019, and it'll be RF-12.
And when you temporarily do that, what happens with WHYY in Delaware?
They move. I'll tell you where they move to in a second.
How many of the channels now and how many channels in the future will be circular polarized? Over to you, Eric.
For the most part, most stations now is CP. I don't know of too many that are linear anymore.
Is that true of both upper and lower VHF as well as UHF, Eric?
Yep. Low VHF, I don't know. There aren't that many of them, and I'm not familiar with the folks that say particular things. Although, if I go through the FCC database, I can tell you for sure.
Branded 33 is really RF channel 3. Are they coming from the Trade Center? Where are they coming from, and are they CP, do you think?
Let's see, HYY is currently on 12, and they're moving to 15. Question, Dick, I was looking this up.
Understand, branded 33, which I think is RF3, where are they transmitting from, and are they CP, do you think?
Actually, I know they're CP, and they're transmitting from 4 times square.
I'm wondering why they come into me so strong. Because 4 times square, I presume, is only 2/3 the height of Empire. They must be radiating either a lot of power in my direction, or they're running some pretty high RF. So go ahead.
I think they're running, I'm not sure what they're running at. I can tell you what they're running in a minute. But if you look at the path from 4 times square out, it's pretty clear, so. Every now and then you don't realize that you're watching ABC from the 4 times square, and full time you're watching NYE, which is the city station, that's full time at 4 times square.
Yeah, NYE I think is 25-1, 2, and 3, and most of the time I get them pretty good. Give me a rough guess, how many feet above the terrain is 4 times square's antenna? Go ahead.
It's not the tip of my tongue. I mean, the tower is like, what is it, 200 and some feet. Actually, I'm putting another antenna up there in the middle of this month. Give me a minute, I'll tell you how much power to run it.
While we're waiting, I'm going to pick up Steve. Kilo Charlie 2, Quebec, Foxtrot, Juliet. Speak a little bit louder and go right ahead with your question, Steve. K2RIW and TechNet.
Good evening, Dick, and everybody on the net. I may be having something with my antenna. I have a very high SWR I didn't have before. So I'll have to check that out. Are you copying me okay?
We're getting you quite well, Steve. Your 80% signal, 20% noise, if you know what I mean. Go ahead.
Not your answer.
Stand by, Steve. Go ahead, Eric.
Okay, WJLP, which is licensed at Middletown Township. They are 340.2 meters above sea level, and they are running 6.9 kilowatts CRP.
Now, 300 and some odd meters is very close to 1,000 feet. That's within a couple hundred feet of Empire, isn't that true, Eric? I didn't know four times square is that high.
Yeah, it's pretty high. But anyway, that's what's listed. And this is all, they do it in meters, not feet.
Roughly how much distance is there, I should know, between four times square and Empire? They're a couple of miles apart, aren't they?
No, four times square is on 42nd Street, and Empire is on 34th Street. And it's 123 avenues to the east. So you can figure it out from that.
Would your guess be close to a mile and a half, so to speak?
Probably a little bit less.
Huh. That's four Times Square. That isn't the building that on New Year's Eve drops the ball, is it? Go ahead.
If you're looking at the ball, it's the building to your left. That is, if you're looking at the ball from Times Square and you're looking downtown, it's the kind of Nash building. You'll notice if you ever look at the pictures, it says H&M on it.
Yeah, I'm going to have to look at 4 Times Square with my Google Map. When you take a vertical look down at the Empire or the Eiffel Tower, you get some exciting looking pictures with the Google Map. I'm going to have to take a look at 4 Times. I've never done that one. What would you, Eric?
I made a signal measurement.
The building actually has 53 floors, but the tower is pretty tall.
Go ahead, Joe. How strong is it?
Okay, with the Sigma feeds my converter, and it's the IFR set to 20 kilohertz per horizontal division. Looking at that carrier at 0.3094 above the bottom end of the band, using that as a reference point, that carrier on 602.3094 is minus 45 dBm. The only one that's stronger than it is WJLP. They come in about minus 40 dBm. Channel 7 is about 46, minus 47. So they're just a little weaker. Being that they're on VHF, which is kind of surprising. So they are putting out a very good signal on UHF.
What's your memory as to how strong they were in the past, Joe?
Weren't that strong. They were about maybe minus 50, 50, 52, 53, something like that. So they increased substantially. Maybe 8 dB is what I recollect in received signal strength. About 8 dB. Not bad. And I noticed the same thing when other stations went to that test a couple of months ago, like last year, that the signal strength was enormously higher, being transmitting off the World Trade Center. It was a substantial, noticeable difference.
Yeah, if 4 Times Square is close to 1,000 feet above sea level, and I'm guessing that the Freedom Tower, 1,776 feet probably above the terrain, so it's probably 1,800 feet above sea level. So they've added, almost 900 feet of altitude. Is that a rough guess, Eric? KE2EJ, KQIW?
Well, the antenna right now is at the top of the spire. The top of the spire is 1,776 feet, so it's a little bit lower than that.
Yeah, but the ground it's sitting on probably is 50 or 100 feet above sea level, isn't it?
No, if you remember, everything got flooded during Christina, so I doubt it's that high. It's more likely 20 feet above sea level. Don't forget that the Hudson River is only a block over.
Okay, and yes, a lot of flooding, particularly in southern Manhattan, did take place. I don't think Hurricane Superstorm Sandy I don't think that brought water up to the base of the Freedom Tower, Eric. Go ahead.
Most of Battery Park City was flooded, and the train station was flooded royally, so I don't know if the water actually made it to the base of the tower, but it's not that high. Actually, next time I drive by, I'll look on the GPS and see what the altitude is.